I hereby introduce to you Mr. Michael Veazey.
Hey, 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 welcome to Amazing FBA, the place to be for UK-based Amazon entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Michael Veazey. Welcome to the show. Hi there, and welcome back to Amazing FBA. This is part of the new experiment in doing some simultaneous video and audio podcast. So let me know what you think, guys, as ever. Go to the Facebook group www.amazingfba.com and let me know your thoughts. Excuse the voice. I'm still recovering from a bit of a major cold, and I've unfortunately been running around the place using my voice in various contexts. So it is going to be a little bit on the rough side, but I thought I'd get back out there and start podcasting because I'm missing you guys. I want to make sure you're not abandoned by your one UK based Amazon entrepreneur that is out there podcasting for you. So we got a couple of questions from the Facebook. So this is a Q&A Tuesday number 11. They mount up quickly, actually. This is why we do the tactical type stuff. And I don't necessarily try and present in a very complete answer, but I try and give you my best sort of off the cuff or moderately researched answers. And then if there are ongoing issues that need to be dealt with specialists, then we might get some specialists in to deal with that for us. So the first question is pretty specialist, but it's something I need to flag up now because it's an important topic, which is the UPC code. And Stuart came up on the about the 30th of June, so a few days ago now, said, okay, you may have seen some talk recently about Amazon cracking down on non-GS1 barcodes in the US. I'm just wondering what people's thoughts are on how to handle this. When I first set up my private label products, I used a third-party barcode company that was significantly cheaper than the official GS1 barcodes. At that stage, I wasn't too worried as I was just starting out and money was tight. And hey, it's not as if I needed to be able to print barcodes onto my packaging to sell in retail shops. The issue now arises that I'm in a position where I could afford to use official barcodes, and indeed I'd want to, so that Amazon doesn't kick me off. The problem is that even though I'm happy to acquire them, I can't change them on my ASINs. Anyone, any ideas on how to go about this? Now, I don't personally claim any expertise in this area. There's a couple of interesting responses. Tahir came back and said, same here, my plan is to create a new child with the new barcode and list it under the actual product, which will become a parent listing, then just delete the old child, which is obsolete. So if that idea could work, we could keep the same reviews. And Stuart said, yeah, he'd been thinking a similar thing himself. And then what happened is that Stuart went back to try that out, and he said, well, just to let you know that it didn't really work very well. So Tahir tried this, and he said when the old child is deleted, the parent listing doesn't show the reviews of it anymore. Also, changing the EAN code in edit mode changes the ASIN of the listing, and reviews and rankings will be gone. So it seems like there's no other option unless Amazon can fuse two listings together into one without losing reviews and rankings. Now, Brian Cook, who's actually based in Canada. So welcome, Brian. So we haven't got many Canadians listening to the podcast, but I know we've got a few. So you're very welcome. Nice to have a different perspective. He said, well, he contacted Seller Central. This is all in Seller Central US. And this is something that somebody else had got as a response in response to a very, very similar query to Seller Central. And basically, they say they verify the authenticity of product UPCs by checking the GS1 database. When you purchase UPCs from resellers, many times they do not update the information with the GS1 database, and it will appear as belonging to a different company. This is why we recommend obtaining your UPCs directly from GS1 and not from other third-party selling UPC licenses to ensure the appropriate information is reflected in the GS1 database. So that's the first thing to say, is that from now onwards, I think it's pretty clear that all of us, and I've also fallen into this trap in the past because I didn't know any better when I set up some of my listings that have been going for quite a long time now and have significant reviews and sales and, you know, momentum behind them. So they're of value to me. So GS1 all the way from the future. Now, question is, then what happens with the existing listings that do not have GS1 barcodes? Well, according to Seller Central again, this recommendation does not mean that Amazon is going to take action against products that have UPCs purchased from other companies. It does not mean that sellers need to go in and change all their UPCs for new ones purchased from GS1. We do not want you to delete your listings and create new ones with new UPCs. That would not be in your best interest or ours. Also, the system will not allow you to modify the UPC for a product that already has an ASIN linked to it. So that sounds quite comforting. So Amazon is not immediately sharpening the knives by the sound of it. However, there is another part of this response from Amazon Seller Central. And the lady says, however, an issue could arise if somebody else tried to list a product using one of these UPCs. We handle these issues on a case-by-case basis. It might be necessary if that happened to get a new UPC and create a new ASIN or modify it for the existing one, which only we can do. So there is that possibility, it seems. But we would need to analyze the specific case. Once again, let me assure you, you do not need to go into your inventory and switch all of your UPCs. In fact, the system would not allow you to do so, and it could create other issues with your listings. My recommendation is to leave your existing listings as they are and get UPCs from GS1 when you want to add new products. Okay, so that's kind of semi-comforting from Seller Central, and that sounds like some common sense. So that doesn't guarantee that nothing nasty is going to happen to anyone. And we've got several hundred people in the Facebook group now, so somewhere like 420 or over now, and quite a few listeners these days. So in a group that large, somebody is going to have something nasty happen, I reckon. And if that happens, please come back to us and tell us what happened and how you dealt with it. But I would say that it doesn't sound like it's worth panicking unduly about it. However, it is really something to keep a very close eye on, because that's the sort of thing that Amazon may have their policy now and they may change their mind a few months down the line. As Tahir says, one thing's for sure, if Amazon decides to delete all the listings with invalid UPC codes, many listings will be gone, because a lot of FBA courses taught people to buy cheap UPC codes. And that is absolutely true. So Kevin King flagged that up, as Tahir mentioned as well, in the podcast interview that I did with him, which is fantastic. If you haven't heard that, then do go and listen. Kevin is just a mastermind of this stuff and a mine of information. I mean, he was talking to me for 2 hours solid, and he's just, as he said himself, he's barely scratching the surface. So please listen to him. But what I would say is this. You've got to make a judgment call. Now, look, if you ask a specialist in UPC code, should you have a valid UPC code? They'll say yes. It's the same with sales tax, which is something else I want to tackle today. If you ask a sales tax specialist, should you, worry about sales tax? They'll say yes. Equally, if you go to an intellectual property lawyer and say, should I trademark my product? Should I get patents pending? Should I copyright? If they have a bit of common sense, they might say, don't go for patents, because that is very, very expensive. Probably, as I understand it, in the tens of thousands of dollars as a minimum. I may be wrong. I'm not a lawyer. But the point I'm making, and my dad was a lawyer, he just did general high street stuff here in the UK. And I remember once taking him a contract, which was just for some very simple position I was having in the school, which was not a big deal, really. And he looked through it and came up with about 20 points which he wanted changing, and I took it back to the school and they were none too pleased. So what I'm saying is, if you ask a lawyer to worry about a contract, they'll worry about it. It's their job. And like, I'm a professional musician. If you ask me to go and listen to a recording of something, I'll pick out 20, 30 flaws, which you didn't even notice, possibly, unless you're a very good musician yourself. So what I'm trying to say is, specialists will always advise you to do the perfect thing. I do take very seriously when someone like Kevin King, who's an entrepreneur rather than a lawyer or something, says we need to deal with the UPC code thing. I take that very seriously. That being said, I think you've got to look at your response. If you've got, for example, I've got one product in the USA, which has been out of stock for quite a while, so its sales ranking isn't that valuable to me at the moment, I suspect. But I'm wanting to restock it because post-Brexit, I want to be selling in dollars and buying in dollars. I want to stay out of the UK economy for a while. And I shared that in the previous episode, which I talked about Brexit initial thoughts, right? I'll have more thoughts, but at the moment the lay of the land is very, very unclear. So the response can't be too crystalline. But anyway, so that is something I want to do. Now, I have an option of going back and taking the same product and just creating a new listing and starting from scratch. And actually, because it is quite a serious seller, I am actually quite tempted to do that and ditch the existing reviews. If, however, I had this product selling well and hadn't left it for so long because I was planning to transfer to the UK, I've had to rethink my whole business strategy, really, because of Brexit, to be honest, which is fine. You have to respond to events. But if I had, 300 odd reviews or whatever it is now, and I was selling like crazy, I would be wary of breaking something that was working until such time as I had to. And then, you know what? As long as you see it coming, as long as you don't rely on something being there forever, if you know there is a flaw, if there's a sort of breakable part of it, that's okay, So I think you've got to make a judgment about this. I certainly wouldn't say that you should do nothing about it. If you have a product which you think is going to be a serious product and it's starting to take off, but you've only got 10, 20, 30 reviews, I would keep that listing running personally, because it's something that's working and all things come to an end, right? All things. So As long as you're not unrealistic about that, if you get 6 months out of a product on Amazon, it's a private label product with no modifications, you're doing well anyway. Let's be frank, right? So keep it running. But if you think it's going to be a serious one that you can build a long-term future on, then start another listing up with the same product, just a different UPC code, but make sure it's a GS1 code, and build that listing more seriously in the future. So you're basically going to have to launch twice. You know, that's one approach. I'm not saying that this is a perfect strategy, but these are obvious points that spring to mind here. Going forward, I think it is very, very important that we're aware of A, that potential weakness in our listings, and the fact that it's a bit of a time bomb potentially, depending on the situation, but that we don't panic unduly, that we're realistic that all these products have a bit of a lifespan anyway, which is short because competition will kill off the profitability if it's not genuinely a really original product. And also, I think we need to weigh it in the balance amongst other things. But there's no question that GS1 is the only way to go for new products. Anyway, so my thoughts on that, this is not definitive guidance. I can't give definitive guidance in something as nuanced as this. But it's clear that sooner or later, we're going to have to grasp that nettle. Anyway, on to the next intractable problem, which seems to be what people are coming up with today. And that is the next question. Next question is from Dylan, who asked about sales tax, which is one of those things that keeps coming up. It's something that was brought up a while ago. He just said, hi guys, as UK international sellers on Amazon US, do we have an obligation to collect and remit sales tax? It seems to be a very murky topic with no clear and definitive answer. There are companies like TaxJar and Avalara who make a very convincing case that international sellers do have to collect sales tax, but they have a vested interest in telling people that. In reality, I wonder how many international sellers actually collect and remit sales tax. Are there any unbiased official guidelines for international sellers regarding sales tax? Also, to international sellers, do you collect sales tax? And if not, why not? I'd be very interested to hear your thoughts. So I definitely don't have a definitive answer about that. And I haven't had one from anyone I know either, I have to say. It's much murkier than the GS1 issue. I've got Mark from Avalava lined up to be interviewed, so he may be able to shed some light on it. But as you said, he's got a vested interest. At least he's a specialist, so he can give us some kind of facts insofar as they exist. But it's true that if you ask an expert, they will worry about things that you've got to weigh up in proportion. If you've got a giant business, you should listen to everything your lawyer says, your accountant, your sales tax specialist, all these guys, you know. But the trouble is, if you start off by bulletproofing your business against every single thing out there, you're going to spend so much money and time on specialists, never mind on the actual thing itself. Like, sales tax is not that huge, I think, but few percent, as I understand it, in general, right? It's not as big as VAT in the UK or in the EU. It's 20%, which is a huge hit. But nevertheless, if you get wrapped up in that before you've even proven whether there's even demand for your product, I would question the value of that. Now, if you're going to invest thousands of pounds developing a product before you even put it on the market, then you probably want to take that as part of your cost, because you are investing more money, you've got more to lose, therefore you need to protect your product more upfront. How that makes sense as a sort of judgment call. Now, my friends who are pretty serious sellers who sell in the US but are based in the UK basically don't seem to be paying any sales tax, I should say, except for one who I know is part of a bigger company that is doing about $1 million a month. And when you get to that size, you can't hide. I mean, so yeah, that they are basically paying. They're the only people I know of. Brian Cook, another interesting bit of input from him. So thanks, Brian, very active member of the group, very helpful. He's a Canadian, and he said he spoke to an accountant there who said, according to the letter of the law, we're supposed to register for income and sales tax in every state where we sell our product, but he didn't advise worrying about doing it yet because it's so complicated and can possibly create rather than solve more problems when trying to do so. That's a very, very interesting point. He says, it's also very unlikely that the IRS will come after me at this point as an international seller. We could also argue, in his opinion, that I don't really have nexus in the UK, given that it's a third party that houses my inventory, i.e. Amazon, and I don't have an official US business location. His advice was to wait until the business is at a much higher level and then work with an expert to bring the business more into compliance with US tax laws. So, interesting response. Very, very interesting point that I hadn't thought of before, that it could actually create more problems rather than solve it. Because I guess, you know, we've all had that experience, haven't we? We phoned up Seller Central to flag up what we think is one problem, and then Seller Central turns around and goes, oh, your listing isn't compliant with our guidelines. There's something wrong with the photos, or it's actually the wrong kind of product, or whatever it is, and suspends the listing when we've been happily selling along under the radar, right? So like I said, it does come down to, are you above the radar? I think in pragmatic terms, there's the letter of the law and then there's what people actually do, right? Let's be fair. Also, here in the UK, there are many sellers from China and some from the US as well, who are not VAT registered and should be because they are foreign trading entities, but they are not VAT registered and they're not paying VAT. Therefore, they are competing in the UK in a way that isn't technically legitimate, but they're doing it. They're getting away with it. I'm sure there'll be some test cases and people will start slamming down on that. But sometimes the reality is very different from the letter of the law. And I think you've got to take a pragmatic view of it. I'm not saying that you should be casual about the law. I'm not saying that you should be hung up in it either. I think if you get hung up on these details too early, it certainly is not worth worrying about. When you have a business that is big enough for the government to come after, for tax authorities to come after, when you have a product that is popular enough for your rivals to wish to nick it, then you may have a point. Okay, that's it for this Q&A Tuesday. There's going to be more to come to do with some really tricky issues, actually, with some Amazon ad stuff as well. This is getting to the subtle stuff. This isn't the sort of newbie. This is the sort of tricky questions now. But guys, as ever, don't forget, come to the Facebook group and ask your questions, www.amazingfba.com/FBF, as in Facebook, as in book. As you can tell, there's some good, intelligent responses there. And aren't people kind of grandstanding and saying they know what they're saying when they don't? But equally, they are taking the trouble to go and talk to people, like they're talking to Seller Central about listing issues. They are doing a bit of research, talking to accountants. So they're giving feedback, not as experts, but as fellow Amazon sellers dealing with the situation and making their own pragmatic decisions between the sort of perfectionist expert situation and expert advice and, you know, doing nothing. Is that middle ground where you've got to make some judgments on how you spend your time and money. There will always be laws you should be complying with and you're not quite yet. There will always be sort of threats to your business. There will always be opportunities. Sometimes our best opportunity is created by a threat to your rivals. For example, if everyone else has dodgy barcodes and you have got nice, clean, squeaky, clean and safe GS1 barcodes, then you could be sitting pretty. So that is potentially a competitive advantage. And again, very simple, just a post-Brexit thought, because I know that we're still hurting over here in the UK, that if everyone else gives up and runs for the hills and you're left standing, then your business is going to be the one to collect. The business is still out there to be had. I mean, the UK in Amazon is one of the biggest Amazon marketplaces in the world. And I believe the UK leads the world regarding the percentage of the population that buys its goods online, or the percentage of purchases, I should say, that are made online as opposed to on the high street. And the population of the US that shops online certainly is still only about 8% or something, which is crazily low. Also, that's not quite an accurate way of looking at it. 8% of purchases are made online, right? The rest are made still not online, i.e. the high street, I guess, and which is kind of crazy. I suppose in theory, there's mail order catalogs and whatever and TV, you know, but there is still a huge market here, guys. Somebody else's weakness is your opportunity. So just always go into these things, go in with common sense, go in and inform yourself, then make a judgment. But just know that the sky is not falling. If the sky seems to be falling, take cover. But when you reemerge, if everyone else is running around like Chicken Little and you keep your head and you spot opportunities, you stand long-term to do fine. So keep your head, guys, and don't oversweat the small stuff. Take the trouble to find out about it. Don't get yourself banned from Amazon, but don't run around stressing about it. There's no need. These things will pan out one way or the other in the end. All you can do is make a judgment and make the decision on the best basis of the information you have at the time. If it turns out later that wasn't perfect, that's hindsight. Hindsight's 20/20 vision. Just always worth mentioning that, because there is a degree of mindset behind all this stuff that you should take account of things, and yet you need to roll with the punches and not beat yourself up and not panic about stuff that hasn't happened yet. See it coming, prepare for it, and then get on with life. That's my advice. Speak to you in the next episode, guys. Let me know what you think about the new video format, and take care. Happy hunting. That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. I really appreciate it. Now, over to you. First, 80-20 everything. Learn the critical few. Maybe there's one thing in this podcast that can make all the difference. Find that thing. 20% of inputs, give 80% of the outputs. Which are the critical few for you? Then take action. Imperfect action beats perfect inaction every single time. Finally, and not least, review. If you've made mistakes, learn from them. If you've made a success, duplicate it. You can't do that unless you look back. So in summary, Learn the critical few, then do, then review. And then, my friend, it's up to you. That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. Speak to you in the next episode.